Morning, everybody. To us of the Camels. Seth wanted to talk perhaps a little bit about to us of the Camels and the 3 weeks, and maybe not so much about Shabbos today. So Chazal tell us that there were five things that happened to Klal Yisrael on this day. The first one that we know about in the history of our nation was that the Luchos were broken on Shivos B'Tammuz. Moshe Rabbeinu went up on 7th of Sivan, depending how you learn, but he went up on Shavuos to Har Sinai to get the Luchos, and when he came down, he saw that the Yidden had made an eagle, so he threw the Luchos to the ground and they broke. And that, Chazal tell us, was on the 17th of Tammuz. In the times of the Beis Mikdash HaRishon, there was a gzera not to bring the Korban Tomid, and the first day that the Beis Hamikdash went without a Korban Tomid was also on Shavuos B'Tammuz. In the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, the Romans had laid siege to the city. That's what Asar B'Tavis is when they laid siege. And on the 17th of Tammuz, they actually managed to breach the walls and get into the city. The defenders of the city retreated into the Beis Hamikdash, into Har HaBayis, Antonia Fortress, and from there they carried on with their fight against the Romans, till eventually 3 weeks later we know what happened. The Romans got into the Beis Hamikdash and destroyed it. So that was one step before getting to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, with the breach of the city walls that happened on the 17th of Tammuz. There's Chazal tell us that Apostomus, the Rosha, he burned to save the Torah. The Chayyot's talking about someone who was a Greek at the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. And another thing that's brought down, Chazal said that happened on this day, is Humat Tzelem Behech. An idol was placed in the Beis Hamikdash. There's a machlokes as to who did it, whether it was done by Menashe much earlier, the first Beis Hamikdash, or perhaps it was the same Apostomus Harosha, who burned to set Torah, also called an idol. Whatever it was, it happened on Shavuos B'Tammuz. And therefore, Chazal saw that this is a day that's Mu'ud L'Paronos, it's a day that things happen, and we have to take it to heart, literally. And therefore, they said that this is a day that we should be ma'ir ourselves to tshuva. And the way that was done is by fasting and by abstaining from various physical pleasures, and therefore they instituted the fast of Shavuos B'Tammuz. The Navi refers to four tzaynus, the tzaym HaShvi, the tzaym HaSiri, tzaym HaRevi, tzaym HaChamishi. There's four tzaynus that are referred to by the Navi, which are Shavuos B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, Tzaym Gedalia, and Asar B'Teves. And apart from Tisha B'Av, which has its own chumras and its own status, the other three fasts fit into pretty much one halachic category on how we deal with them. And essentially, it's brought down that these fasts depend on the situation that Klal Yisrael find themselves. If they find themselves in a situation of shmat, they are being threatened, then they should keep these fasts. But if it's a situation of peace and they're living happily, then it's not necessary to keep the fast. And with time, it was accepted that even Shaloi B'Shah Shmad, with this length of the Golos, really essentially we're always threatened, just not threatened in the same way some generations are threatened. Therefore, we always keep the fast. But with a slight difference, is that when the fast was initially, was initially established, it was done like Tisha B'Av, that it would be a 24-hour fast with all the five restrictions that come with Tisha B'Av, that we don't eat, but apart from that we also don't wash and sicha and wear shoes and parental relations. Those restrictions were also included. But today we say, when we keep the fast the way we keep it today, we say that no, we only abstain from drinking, and it's only a daytime fast, not a 24-hour fast. So that is how we have it today, that we keep the fast, and we consider it a strict fast. A fast that's not considered a strict fast would be an example of Tanis Esther. Tanis Esther was added later, and therefore Tanis Esther has certain coolers. But otherwise we say this is a fast that was taken on, and everybody accepted, and everybody's got to keep it, except certain circumstances we'll discuss. But yes, everybody's got to keep it. But because we're not considered the Shah Shmarim, we're only keeping it now as Minog, so we only take on the issue of eating and drinking, and we only do it as a daytime fast. Nevertheless, there are individuals who have taken upon themselves to keep all the protein of Shavuot and Tammuz, with all these fasts, with all the dinim of a fast. And if a person feels that he is of that level in his Yerushalayim, we call him the Baal Nefesh, then he should be, he may be machmir, with the exception of things that are noticeable in public, because then it looks like he's walking around and saying, look at me, I am the local tzaddik. And that is the yuhara, the person makes himself out to be better than everybody else. Therefore, even though he wants to be machmir, washing and anointing and marital relations, nevertheless, when it comes to shoes, shoes are something that he should wear. I guess today there's a way to get around that. You can wear synthetic shoes and not leather shoes, no difference. But that's how we pass it. Now, Allah, that neither sandal is not the machmir, we're worried about. You are worried about how the public is taken into account. But again, this is for a Baal Nefesh. A friend told me, a Maisa, that someone, if they tell me in Yeshiva's Kolteria, once went up to Rabbi Dalia Eisenzatzal, the Mashikiyach of the Yeshiva, and he asked him about how to be machmir and certain. That it says about Nefesh Yachmir. Nefesh? Do you keep every sip in Shulchan Aruch? Do you know all the Mishnah Berurah backwards and forwards? You call it, when you do that, then you can start talking about being a Baal Nefesh. So, mentioning it because there are people who feel themselves, who know themselves to be Baal Nefesh. I think the average Jew is not trying to put people down, but Baal Nefesh is a very high level. It's not the average. Rabbi Karp brings that even though the minute is a mutter to wash oneself on these three fasts, including Shavuot and Tammuz, the minig is not to have a full body warm wash. In other words, if it was cold, or if it was partial, just hands, face, etc., just the limbs, then it would be allowed to be done warm, or you do it cold. The chiyuv of keeping the fast starts with the age of Bar Mitzvah. Someone who is under the age of Bar Mitzvah has no chiyuv, Bar or Bas Mitzvah, has no chiyuv in keeping the fast. It's not like Yom Kippur is a raisa, and therefore we talk about some chinuch, any other mitzvah, that there's an Indian chinuch. Chinuch does not mean that the child has to fast as chinuch reasons. Chinuch means that we teach them about the fast, and we make the fast a little bit. It's called time of shois, but if they normally have breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning, today you have breakfast at 9 o'clock. When they get a little bit older, you make 10 o'clock in the morning. There is a minig, I haven't found a mocker for it, but it's a very common minig, that children who are becoming Bar or Bas Mitzvah, the three fasts before their Bar or Bas Mitzvah, they fast those three fasts in trial. It's a very common minhag, and I have not found a clear-cut motto for it. The only place it talks about chinuch is Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, even then, it says, once they reach the stage of a year before Bar or Bas Mitzvah, so then it's kedai for them to try, if it doesn't adversely affect. Remember, a child, his growth is very important, and if we adversely affect his growth, affect him for life. And therefore, when it comes to feeding children, we are very machmir to make sure to do it properly. We have it in many places that we decide who this is the growth, this is the what's necessary for children. So we try not to feed them treif, but food that is also not because it's treif, but also because now you may not eat it. For example, on a fast day, we say for a child, there's no issue whatsoever to eat that type of food. An example given is eating before Kiddush. Can a child eat without making Kiddush? And we say a child needs to eat. You can't starve him because he can't make Kiddush. For an adult, this food is also. But we say it's not treif for food. It's kosher food at a time that is inappropriate. When it comes to children, inappropriate, there's no such thing as inappropriate time. So yes, if you can make Kiddush and you can do it for him, it's much better. But we're talking about when you can't, then that's not a reason to stop him from. We're very makbid on children having their proper nourishment and their proper growth. And if a child wants to be machmir, one should stop them. Rather, if they want to be machmir, give them an hour, give them 2 hours. And what's more important is that they should know the essence of the day. And therefore, this is not a day to give them to order in pizza or candies and cakes, desserts, three-course meals. They should eat simple, wholesome foods without going Rosh Hashanah is angle, they don't have to spoil themselves with good food, which applies to anybody, for that matter, that anybody who, for whatever reason, needs to eat on a fast day should eat good and wholesome food that will sustain him, but doesn't go in things that we usually eat more for snack purposes, for delight, like desserts and sugar things. Purposely not mentioning meat and wine, because there are people who are weak and need to eat in a fast. Sometimes meat is a necessary form of protein, and therefore, if you know, to go have a steak, okay, fine, have a regular piece of meat, don't have a piece of steak. A sick person, again, what we call on Shabbos, chronish and sakana. Obviously, if there is sakana, there's nothing to talk about in Yom Kippur. You eat normally if there's sakana involved. But a chodesh embus, it's not life-threatening, but he is very ill. He is, whether the definition of chodesh embus, is essentially that he is so ill that he can't, that he needs to lie down. That's basically how we consider chodesh embus. It's not that there's danger to his life, that we know there isn't, but he's so ill that he needs to lie down. That's a chodesh embus, or a woman who's given birth, and she's still within 30 days. So as we know, when it comes to Yom Kippur, 3 days we give her without asking questions. If the woman's within 3 days of birth, we force it. Meaning if she says, no, I'm strong and I want to fast, we don't listen to her. That is wrong. She has to be within 72 hours of birth. If it's up to a week, so then we ask her if she can or she can't. And up to 30 days, so then it depends on how she's feeling and what the doctor says, etc. Obviously a woman who had surgery or something like that, so a C-section, and obviously the situation is different, whatever the health situation. But on the standard, regular case, we're going to say that 3 days we force her, 7 days we ask her, up to 30 days, it depends on the doctor. When it comes to these fasts, Matromeko, up to 30 days we don't even ask questions. If she's beyond 30 days and she still feels weak from the birth, then she's also considered a Yoledes, and the Yoledes is potter. The Chiyuv didn't even start for her. She's totally out of the category of having to fast. So someone who's Choyle She'em B'Sakana, or a woman who is within 30 days of, or like 30 days of giving birth, is not included. People who are not feeling well, so then we say they should not fast. So someone who is weak and he needs food in order to strengthen himself, older people who can't go without food, or they're suffering as a result of not eating, and also if they don't eat, it can cause damage, and you know, it can harm them, especially diabetics, for example. We always tell them that their fasting is a no-no for them. Then, of course, these people are barred from fasting. When it comes to pregnant women and nursing women, the straightforward halacha is that they are included in the gzeira, that they should fast, but as long as there's no detriment to the health, no detriment to the child's health, whether the child is born or the child is for the fetus, a pregnant woman or a nursing woman, if the baby needs the mother to eat, then that's enough of a reason for the woman to break a fast. And if she's not feeling well, then it's possible for her to fast. She can't say, well, I'm strong enough and I can't. No. A woman who has the children that are reliant on her, that she may not machmir herself. The Das Torah brings down a shita, and this is in certain communities they hold of the shita. There's a halacha in Hilchos Nida that says that a woman that is within 24 months of giving birth is sparko evoreo. It has to do with the halachas of the Koveya Vesis. Enough is that until 24 months after her birth, her body has returned back to the way it was beforehand. And therefore, she's still in a different state. Based on that, there are those who hold that a woman in 24 months of giving birth shouldn't fast. That, I think, is something for a person to consult their local Orthodox rabbi as to what their custom is, whether they rely on such shit or not. But if you hear of women who say, well, during my childbearing years, I have fasted these fasts, it usually comes from that idea, is that essentially for 24 months after birth, there's mokum. With Shivasa the Tammuz, we're starting the period of the 3 weeks. It's not just that we have a fast now and a fast at the end. We're entering a period where it is considered a sad period for Klal Yisrael, a period where negative things that have happened. It's we know that the Jewish calendar is, I remember my wife, I was still dating or maybe newly married, she had heard this, and she said to me, if you would describe the Jewish year, which shape would you call it? And most people will say, well, it's round, it's a circle. And she said, no, she learned that the Jewish year is a spiral. But essentially, yes, it is a circle. It goes back and comes around to itself again and again. But hopefully we grow each year, therefore each circle is above the circle below it. But the idea is that the year has a cycle to it, and there are parts of the year that are more much into things and less much into other things. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us the story of Hanukkah, that they had this fight with the Greeks, and then they won the war, and it says, L'shana kavum, that it should be a Yom Tov, and they L'shiras was the Shabbos. I heard once from one of my rabbis in Yeshiva, what's L'shana kavum? Why does it say the next year they set it up? They should have said it immediately. The day they won the war, next year on this day we're going to make a celebration. Why did they wait a year? And the way he explained it, was that they felt that they needed to go through a year to see which day of the year was most appropriate for a celebration like Hanukkah. And after going through the whole year, they came to the conclusion that the day that we won the war was the day that was appropriate. And the same thing we say, like, if a person has a Din Torah with a goy, he should, and in Av, he should push it off. If a person has a Din Torah with a goy and he has a possibility of having an Adar, then he should push it off to Adar. We see that Adar is considered a positive. Adar is considered a month of the good tidings. Nisan is considered a month of Geula. B'Nisan, Nigalu, B'Nisan, Masidin, Nigoyal. So there's, Sivan, we always talk about it in the month of being Kabbalah Satorah. So there is something, it's not just, oh, it was done then, now's a good time to celebrate, is it? Because there are certain koichas in the year, or the negative koichas, the downside of the year, side of the year that brings us to understanding that we're mortal and we're fickle, and we need to rely on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So essentially it's closer to getting to Bitachon, is this time of the year, and as we get closer to Av, there's more reason to be, so to speak, fearful of these days of, in a way, they're days of awe. I know the days of awe we usually refer to as the Yom HaRoim, but they have a different type of awe these days, a different type of connotation of how we do our Avodas Hashem. So, Midina the Gemara, from the Gemara, the restrictions that apply only start in what's called Shvur Shechavoy, the week that Tisha B'Av is going to fall in. This year, Tisha B'Av will be on a Tuesday, just like Shavuot also. Today is a Tuesday. In 3 weeks from today is going to be Tisha B'Av. So from the Shabbos prior to that Tisha B'Av, that means that Sunday and Monday is considered Shvur Shechavoy, and the various restrictions that we discuss are start day. The halacha brings that there were various mitzvahs that were added over the years and generations, and k'lekach, that we have quite a list, the string of minhagim, which are not even universal because they're not accepted by all communities. The Sfardim, for example, generally, not for sure, but generally do not start any of the minhagi avedos from Shivas and the Tammuz, but rather they started from Rosh Chodesh Av. So even though the Gemara says from Shvur Shechavoy, they started already earlier. We have a different set of minhagim that have been instituted by our Rishonim and the Begolim, and therefore starting with the beginning of the 3 weeks, we start a period of semi-avelus. The first thing to mention is that the next three Shabbosos, we then have special Haftarahs. Usually the Haftarah on Shabbos is read from the Navi in connection to something that is related to the Parasha. Last week was Parashat Balak, so we read from Treyas, so where it mentions the story of Balak and Bilam, the curses that Bilam tried to give us, so that we read the Navi that mentions it. This coming week, we're not going to be reading from a Navi which is related to the Parsha, but rather we're going to read a special Navi which is related to the Galus. It's called the Shloshet Depuranisa. We read three Haftarahs that are leading up to destruction. Eventually we have Shabbos Chazorin. And then following Tisha B'Av, we're going to have the Shiva de Nechemta, the seven Haftarahs that refer to the Nechama, future Geula. So one thing we start is not to get married. We don't get married during the 3 weeks. One can make a Sudas Erusin during the 3 weeks. If you have an engagement, and you can make a Suda for it. but that's only till Rosh Chodesh. From Rosh Chodesh, then even a sit-down, fully catered meal for an Erus you're not going to do, but rather you can make a vault or whatever you want to call it, where people come and have some refreshments, and wish after, but to have a proper Sudas Mitzvah that we don't do even after Rosh Chodesh Av. As for dancing and singing, that already from Chivas of the Tamils we're going to Aser, and even if you, this week, someone gets engaged and makes a Sudas Erusin, but it should be without dancing and singing. That will mean even if someone were to have a bar mitzvah is not related. You can't choose to have or not have a bar mitzvah. When a boy turns 13, he becomes a bar mitzvah. So you can have a sort of bar mitzvah, but this mitzvah must be without music, without singing and dancing. And goes without saying that singing and dancing, stam, to play music, to sing and to dance, even without a sort of, obviously, is awesome. As for listening to music, so generally, we say that listening to music during the time Bizman Hazeh is brought down as a minhag not to avoid because of Zeichat HaKorban. There's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch about things that we do Zeichat HaKorban, and one of them is not to listen to music. However, all the modern poskim have said in now day and age where there is a prevalence of people feeling depressed, there is a weakness of character compared to the previous generations, it's necessary that we have this outlet, and therefore there are very few people who are knowing not to listen to music during the year. But when it comes to these times of Avedos, then we reinstitute it and we say there's not a time to listen to music during the 3 weeks. There's brought down that if someone sings Shiras Vesishpachas and through that he gets to his lavos of Avodah Saboira, so then there is no kveda to sing something that brings him closer to Hashem. Based on that, people want to be mako on anything which is just singing and not musical instruments, what we call a cappella. I'll leave everybody to ask their own rabbi what he's about it. I personally think that a cappella is just a modern day term to find yet another heter to find something generally also. It's listening to music, it's not much different from any other music, just because they now have a vocal beatbox instead of a drum. Doesn't make it much different, but again, we're dealing with a weaker generation. There are those who are mightier it. So I leave this up to everybody to ask their own rabbi what is the halacha on listening to a cappella music. Another thing that we have during the 3 weeks is we don't take haircuts. There is an opinion that holds that on Erev Shabbos you can have a haircut, Lechoy Shabbos. We generally are machmir on it, but you can use, if you have other reasons to be make of the two together. And that would only apply before Rosh Chodesh Av. Once Rosh Chodesh Av comes, then Erev Shabbos is not enough. Children should also not have haircuts, even children who have not reached the age of chinuch, and therefore they're not mechuyev in keeping all the avelos, but the parents shouldn't send them for a haircut. A chosen, a bal bris, that means someone who is a sandek, or someone whose child is having a bris, or an ovel who has been through avelos, and because of avelos he may not have a haircut, and now the avelos comes considered manuvel, so he needs a haircut now, so then these three people can have a haircut in 3 weeks. Haircuts includes any body hair, not just the head, the face or any other body parts. It applies to men and women. Women just have the heter that if it's a question of tznias, hair is coming out from under the head covering. And the only way to take care of it is to cut it off, or it is more of a question of something that's for mikveh, or because she feels that she has hair that bothers her, that could bother her husband, or if a girl's on shidduchim, we say that she can be more mako. And therefore certain places where it could be noticeable or affecting her outward appearance, and that she shouldn't be considered as a manuvel, then we allow her to cut the hair. Making the bracha of Shechayanu is a minig to avoid, is not a minig to avoid, it's a minig that we have to avoid saying Shechayanu, more correctly. If you have a Shechayanu, it's better to leave it to Shabbos or leave it to after the 3 weeks. Those who are machmir on Inyanei Kabbalah, the new Shabbos, it's Asur. This doesn't mean that if you have something which requires a shechiyanu, then you should use it without a shechiyanu. Meaning, if you bought yourself a new garment, it doesn't mean that you can wear it without shechiyanu. It means don't wear it. If you need to, so then you wear it on Shabbos. And if you need to during the week and you don't have anything else to wear, so then it's hard to say a person doesn't have anything to wear. I mean, we're talking about during the 3 weeks, not during the 9 days that you can wash. So more likely in when it comes to the subject of a fruit, you say that a new fruit you shouldn't make shechiyanu on. Meaning not that you should eat it without shechiyanu, but you shouldn't eat it. When should you eat it? Wait till after the 3 weeks. It's going to go bad. Wait for Shabbos. If it's still going to go bad, it's not Sunday, but now Shabbos comes, it's going to go bad. So then in a chanami, then you say you can make shechiyanu on it even on a weekday. But again, it's got to be these extenuating circumstances. So generally, we're going to say that. Try avoid making shechiyanu. If a person needs to buy new clothing, then we're going to say that essentially there's nothing wrong during the 3 weeks, not during the 9 days. During the 3 weeks, there's nothing wrong with buying new clothing and items and various things that we have. As long as it's not those type of things that you need to make shechiyanu on, which depends on the cost of the item. Something which is fairly expensive, it's something that you buy only not on a regular basis, but only after an extended time. For every person that's different, extended time. But that is basically how we're going to say shechiyanu. So if you're buying underwear or socks or something like that, that's not something you're going to make shechiyanu on. That's no problem to buy new shoes. The meaning is not to make shechiyanu on shoes. Therefore, you can buy shoes during the 3 weeks. Interesting. Let me discuss this one on Machavusas. It's brought down that if you buy yourself a new talis, you make a shechiyanu. I remember he was like, talis, that's not something expensive. You buy that every couple of years. So it depends on every person, but Ramosha finds it very clearly you want talis shechiyanu. That's an example of something that comes only occasionally, and it is costs a fair amount of money. That is something you make shechiyanu. So that's something that you shouldn't purchase during the 3 weeks. During the 3 weeks, we avoid, punishing people, punishing students or children by giving them corporal punishment. We don't touch or spank during the 3 weeks. Even if it was a very soft hitting, we don't do it. The Gemara brings, one of the Amoraim saw someone who was about to punch someone else and he stopped it. And the person who stopped, he says, "Why did you stop me?" He says, "I was just going to, make it very soft. It was just a symbolic one. I wasn't going to hurt you." But I saw that there was a shade behind you and he was going to take your fist and make it much harder and he was going to hurt you. How to understand that? Esoteric, but this is, we look at the halacha of Shavuot, and halacha of Shavuot is we learn from that this is a time to avoid giving out such punishment. Also, during the 3 weeks, we avoid going to places of danger. Therefore, it is a common custom that people do not go to the seaside, do not go swimming in the ocean during the 3 weeks because of the danger. Shavuot, as I said, on Sukkot there's no problem. None of the 9 days, during the 3 weeks, there's no problem of swimming, but there's a problem of going to places of danger, and the sea has a lot of dangers involved. Now is also not a time to have your house painted. That should be pushed off till afterwards. And although the halacha is that a person should have every single day, there should be a time when he thinks about the korban, says Tikkun Chatzos, should be worried and contemplate the korban and the wanting of the geula. This is a time that a person should be more involved and think and more careful. Mekayim. There is a minhag that some people don't avoid meat and wine the whole 3 weeks, except for Shabbos. The common minhag is only during 9 days. For Ashkenazim, that's why they push a cowboy. And one more minhag brought down during the 3 weeks is that discussion whether you make Mevarchim HaChodesh on Chodesh Av. When Chodesh Av comes every month before Rosh Chodesh, on the previous Shabbos, say Mevarchim HaChodesh, and because you're excited to announce the arrival of the new month, do we do that for Chodesh Av? It's brought down as a Machloikas, the Mice of the Minik Israel, Nakhila, is